Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. It's the evening of the fourth day, Yud Ches beChodesh Teves, Parashas Shmos, Tavshinayim Vav, the evening of the third day, Tuesday, 29 December 2015. Webcasting from what James Michener, the historical novelist, called the source, and I call the obsession. That's what anti-Jew hatred is, an obsession with Jews that the obsessed cannot free themselves of, which is a chain of myths about Jewish power that are fantasies with no truth to them. Last Tuesday, at 5 in the morning on the BBC, in what the host called a phone-in amnesty, callers could say what they want, and one did, in a 13-minute rant against the Jews right out of Mein Kampf, which was influenced by the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, those two hysterical tracts describing the Jews as the most malevolent people on earth who want to enslave all of mankind. Karl Marx himself thought as much, that poor devil, who suffered all of his life because he hated the Jews into which he had been born. On both sides of his family there were generations of Rabbonim, learned rabbis, but in the age of reason, the age of enlightenment, the Napoleonic Wars that emancipated the Jews in Europe, Hilkar's father, like thousands of German Jews, apostatized. He went to church and got baptized and took along little six-year-old Karl with him. Not that his father had become a believing Christian, not at all. It was all done for commercial reasons and because Jews, like them, had followed the Christian intelligentsia who had dumped their Christianity. All religion was bunk, they thought. Marx then developed his theory of Marxism, which was a non-religious collection of ideas that, like Christianity, pointed the finger of guilt, really of evil, at the Jews. Marx, in his utopian fantasy of a better society after capitalism had run its nasty course, he thought that Europe's Jewish investment bankers, like the Rothschilds, were out to monopolize the money system, suck up all the money in the world, turn everybody into penniless paupers, enslaved to them. Jew bankers were the bankers of Europe's kings who were forever going to war with one another, which the Jew bankers loved so that they could be war profiteers and didn't care how many people died. That's how much they love money. Marx's Bible that he wrote was called Das Kapital, money, and it was a theory of the evils of capitalism that logically dragged the world into war, and how the most powerful capitalists were the Jews who wanted that. The Bible begins with, in the beginning, God. Marxism begins in atheism, which is just the opposite. And here, last Tuesday on the BBC, was a 13-minute rant by some bloke calling himself Andy from St. Margaret's, who said of the Jews, quote, "They're trying to control us more and more. They want to put a chip up our backsides, a ring through our noses, and a visor for our horizons. The elite, the Rothschilds, who own the Bank of England, the people who own the Federal Reserve, they're all Zionist Jews. The people who own corporate America, the media, you'll find if you just do a little bit of research, they're all Zionist Jews. We're ruled by Zionist Jews. We're dominated by the Jews system, the financial Jewish system." Close quote. He also threw up the old ludicrous legend about today's Jews having no connection to the Jews of the Bible or history. We're all descendants of the Khazars who converted 1,000 years ago. He went on, quote, "We keep going on about the Jews. Mainstream media, they keep banging on about the Jews and the Holocaust. We keep going on about 6 million Jews." The British Campaign Against Anti-Semitism organization, of course, protested to the Beeb and demanded that it turn over what identification it had on this guy to the police, though I'm not sure why. This is no crime in my mind. I don't know what British law says about public speech, but I see no call to violence here. This is his view of history and economics that matches the Marxian worldview that is much respected still in Western universities. Adolf Hitler thought this way. Similar views were on display in the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, that infamous forgery produced by the Russian Secret Service, Secret Police. It's commonly identified as an anti-Semitic tract, but its inspiration was truly anti-Zionist. Its inspiration seems to have been what took place 7 years before the forgery was published in 1904, I think, in 1897 in Basel, Switzerland, Viennese journalist Theodor Herzl presided over a meeting of mostly non-religious Jewish thinkers and entrepreneurs, and it has come down to us as the first Zionist Congress. The protocol seems to have been inspired by that meeting and seen in it a gathering of malicious Jews plotting to resurrect the Holy Land as a base for world conquest. Mind you, the protocols, the Mein Kampf, and Andy here are all post-Christian in their hatred of Jews. Not a word about killing Jesus, the carpenter from Nazareth. That was passé. And today, the fantasy of a Jewish cabal remains. That's a word derived from Kabbalah, the mystical strain in Judaism. It lives on leastwise in the mind of Andy of St. Margaret's. It's one of the reasons why, by the way, Reformed Jews, who opened their first temple in Germany and called it a temple, not a synagogue, some 7 years before Marx was born. For centuries, the Goyim had imagined that when Jews gathered in their synagogues, they plotted evil. So the very word synagogue bore a spooky, evil connotation. Reformed Jews didn't want to call their new assembly hall synagogues, when Goyim believed a cabal of Jews, the elders of Zion, gathered in them to cackle and hatch their nefarious plots. So they said, let's call it a temple. And by the way, it's not a good sign that the Germans are reported this week to be lifting the ban on publishing Mein Kampf, which has been in force since the post-war occupation. And the German government thinks it will be a way to defend against the rising tide of anti-Semitism by exposing the craziness in that book, not to mention its tedium. I read half and then put it down. It's mostly Der Führer talking historical poppycock like Andy here. It was his crackpot version of history, trying to sound like Hegel and Kant and Spengler, all with their grand visions of the arc of human history. And so did Hitler sermonize in this regard. Nonsense. On Monday, the Wiesenthal Center presented a report to J-Post regarding the year ending as one of the worst for this rising tide of anti-Semitism. The year saw, quote, unprecedented explosions of anti-Semitic and anti-Israel hatred not encountered since the end of World War II. And in a separate story in London, again, the Metropolitan Police recorded a 60% increase in anti-Semitic incidents over the year before. And in yet a separate Jewish Telegraph Agency story out of Paris, there is a new photo exhibition being mounted there by Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders, which focuses on the suffering of the Ancient Ones. The head of the KRIF, the National Jewish Organization, which, by the way, dates to Napoleon ordering the Jews of France to organize themselves into one national body. He asked the Paris municipality to deny the exhibition space in a city facility, but the KRIF was rebuffed. Head of the KRIF, Roger Kuckerman, protested that in focusing on one particular terrorist in this exhibition, they labeled him a martyr. He called this shocking. Terrorists turned into martyrs. Indeed, anti-Judaism is roaring back into fashion. There was another story about American Jewish college students, half of them witnessing or being the target of an anti-Semitic incident. And there is another forum, evidently, as was told to me today, for anti-Semitism, which is the social media. It was told to me by the head of a think tank, a friend and acquaintance in the States, whom I called for some advice. For yours truly might also now be a victim of the return of anti-Semitism. More on that, but first, some music.
Thank you.
So, as I was saying before the music, I may be now the victim of anti-Semitism, though it's still too soon to tell. The situation is this. After last Thursday's webcast, I received a furious, off-the-rails insult letter from a subscriber who canceled his subscription after he heard me speak less than adoringly of the late Rabbi Kahana. Not that I was surprised. This is not the first time subscribers who value my commentary discover that, unlike them, I am not a member of the Kahana Admiration Society. I'm even very critical of the late rabbi and his devotees, at which point the subscriber literally cannot stand hearing that and cancels his subscription. The letter was one blistering line of hatred and accusations after the other about what a phony I am. All I care about is hearing the sound of my own voice. How could I not demand that those innocent detainees be released immediately? As an American citizen, I should be outraged at their administrative detention. And I would add, just like an Arab, everybody who says this and talks about their rights forgets that in Judea and Samaria, this is not the law of the land. We are living under martial law. Well, a letter like that is water off a duck's back to yours truly. I've had them before. But then I discovered this now ex-subscriber who had previously praised my book to the skies on the book's Amazon page, where buyers can review the book for others to read. Only now, he posted, not a review, and it's still there, you can check it out, a one-line statement saying, I condone torture, so no one should believe anything I say. Well, a friend and subscriber wrote to Amazon to have them remove this nonsense because it violates their own conditions. Posts must review the book being offered for sale, and this comment had nothing to do with the book. But, well, by the way, this was not the first time someone had done this, a crank anti-Jew goy before, and the same friend protested that obviously that character had not read the book, had only seen me talk about the book on YouTube, and on that basis, Amazon did remove his nasty crackpot a few sentences. Well, this time, there's resistance at Amazon to removing this slander, or libel, whichever it is. They refused my friend's request, saying it was compatible with their guidelines, which is simply a response that's not of this world. I, too, contacted Amazon via the abuse button provided by Amazon for such situations, but I've yet to be responded to, and it's long past due. So I called a friend and colleague who had a long and famous battle with an anti-Jew in the courts over slander or libel, I forget which, to get some advice. And the answer I got surprised me. My friend continues to be attacked in the social media, and as for Amazon, and I guess other sites, the people in charge are Arabs. In other words, anti-Semitism may be percolating through Amazon, too. So the nasty lie that I condone torture remains on my book's webpage. The one who posted it, the ex-subscriber, this ex-superfan, has flip-flopped and thinks nothing of lying about me, which does not surprise. It comports with my view of the Kahana cultists. I think they do terrible damage to the Jewish people, and in particular our settlers. And I believe deep down many of them, if not all, really do wish the Jewish people the opposite of goodwill. I seem to have been the target of the standard Kahanai response this past week to the plight of the detainees. They are 100% positive that they have been tortured. Anyone who, like yours truly, does not agree supports the torture. I said nothing last Thursday about condoning torture. On the contrary, I ended by saying that if indeed the GSS knows these boys are innocent and are torturing them, then they are monsters. But my ex-subscriber did not hear that. I merely voiced my opinion that nobody knows the truth, left or right, except the GSS and the boys. I frankly am flabbergasted by this person's certainty, and not only his, but too many people on the right. I'm open to all possibilities, and when the truth comes out, I will react accordingly. But so many people are without a shadow of a doubt that torture is going on, and the boys are innocent. And I ask, how possibly can anyone know this? For sure, just like everybody else, when the Duma horror broke, I too doubted Jews did it, for the simple reason the house was deep inside that community and not on the outskirts. And also because an expert on Arab behavior that I am, I consider it perfectly reasonable to imagine that the Arabs did it for personal reasons. They're always having family feuds and blame the Jews in this case as a diversion and also to, you know, extra added points. Eminently possible, I thought, and on the background as well of the dreadful behavior of the GSS 20 years ago leading up to the Rabin assassination. They were engaged in entrapment. They produced a phony video of a secret meeting of right-wingers plotting the assassination, stuff like that. I'm also no fan of the Israeli police. We are a great nation in many ways, but not in our political life, which includes our police. Moreover, unbeknownst to my furious ex-subscriber, I have been a contributor to Honenu, which provides legal counsel to settlers harassed by the GSS and the police. But no more. Today I heard that Honenu was a neo-Kahanite group. But much more important, apart from that, was learning that Itamar Ben-Gvir is the lawyer for one of these detainees representing Honenu. And that being the case, count me out. Moreover, as of last Thursday and since then, one Israeli leader after another has come out in support of the GSS and the detention of these boys. These are men who have earned my trust. Itamar Ben-Gvir has not. And if they say these accusations of torture are false, what am I to do? Not trust them? I'm certainly not going to trust Ben-Gvir. In any case, I reserve judgment because I know no more about what happened than anybody else. Maybe it's a frame-up. Maybe it's not. I don't know what the truth is. I do know that I trust Yalon, Bennett, Netanyahu, respected rabbis, all of whom I have experienced and believe to be decent human beings with whom I certainly do not agree on many issues, but I do not dismiss them as monsters. What also has puzzled me is the perfect amnesia in the current situation of any reference whatsoever to what happened shortly after the three yeshiva boys were kidnapped and murdered in Gush Etzion, which launched those terrible 50 days of missile attacks and thousands of Jews running for their lives into bomb shelters. What happened was the kidnapping of a young Arab boy in Jerusalem and someone burning him to death, a Jew. Not a word of this horror in recent days from the right, for that would lead to the possibility that the GSS and its backers, these respectable people, are fearful that Duma was another case of a Jew burning an Arab. I could be wrong, but I think the Arab monsters who penetrated that shul in Har Nuf and murdered the men inside and chopped off a head, horribly mutilated others, also referenced the burning of that Arab boy. And in a nutshell, if indeed the GSS is onto a serious plot to ignite murder and mayhem here in the pursuit of the end of days, as the government seems to be arguing, and the establishment of a king instead of democracy, then I trust them to do what is necessary to prevent that. Yes, I cannot believe that the GSS is so evil and stupid to waste its time trying to pin the Duma arson on boys they know to be innocent. That would be the biggest crime of all, wasting their time that way instead of seeking out, as I think they want to, the real culprits. Hashem elech, Hashem alach, Hashem imloch le'olam va'el. Hashem elech, Hashem alach, Hashem imloch le'olam va'el.
קהילות קודש יקדישו בכל השם אלה ריבבות רבבה ירננו בכל השם מעלה שביבי שלהבות ישננו בכל תומכי תהילות יתמידו בכל השם
You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. So, yes, I go with Minister of Education Naftali Bennett, and not Itamar Ben-Gvir. Bennett had this to say yesterday: the Duma attackers are not religious Zionists. This is 180 degrees from religious Zionism. We see the state as the beginning of redemption, and their goal is to bring down the state. We are the state, if someone has not noticed. The right is ruling. He said his ministry must treat this group of 70 to 80 youngsters who have lost their way. I gave a figure last week of maybe 200. He seems to be sure it's much less. He said we have to reach out and pull them out of this dangerous group and use a heavy hand against the murderers. We have to give the youngsters attention to gain their trust and pull them out of this small and dangerous circle, close quote. And we may be hearing here an unwitting exposure of the conviction, his conviction, the conviction of the GSS, that they communicated to Bennett that there are for sure a Jew or Jews who did this terrible deed. In any case, this last week in Israel has been a boiling pot of emotional turmoil over this situation, and likely has contributed to the general ill will connected to Ayelet Shaked's initiative to require enemy agents in Israel's NGOs to identify themselves and expose who pays their salaries. The blood is so up that a couple of academics at Hebrew U smeared Ministress of Justice Ayelet Shaked for being on, one of them, for being on the payroll of murderers in Sierra Leone, and for being, the other one said, a neo-Nazi scum. How ironic and interesting. The similar tenor of these radical leftists on the one hand, and their opposite number on the radical right. My ex-subscriber, the likely Kahana devotee, went through the roof and called me every name in the book for condoning torture. And here are men on the other side of the political and religious solar system, if you will, calling Israel's Ministress of Justice a neo-Nazi and scum for her anti-NGO legislative proposal. How similar they are, both sides, in their hysterical hyperbole, this flying off the handle with language out of control and beyond all reason and proportion. Disagree with Ayelet Shaked, by all means, but calling her a neo-Nazi? And as for vandalizing my Amazon page because I condone torture, these are people out of control. It seems to be in tune with the temper of the times. Carly Fiorina got it right in fingering Donald Trump as someone who puffs himself up by demeaning others. I find him vulgar, but that may be part of his attraction, for American culture has become impossibly vulgar. Last item, the good news segment. Naftali Bennett repeated yet again this week his long-standing position that at least some of the so-called West Bank should be annexed. Actually, I reject his partial demand. He thinks it makes his request more palatable if he wants only Gush Etzion first and next. I find his position a mixed blessing, a mixture of daring and cowardice. The good side is that it desensitizes the shocking idea of annexation, making it more palatable in the public arena. The downside is backing away and asking only for a piece of Judea and Samaria. If we're entitled to the Gush, we're entitled to all of it. For years, I have been kvetching about the refusal of Israelis to demand their rights. Just like the Negroes in the American South who demanded their civil rights, Judea and Samaria are rightfully ours according to the League of Nations mandate and what the medieval European schoolmen called natural law. Indeed, for my mind, this conflict here is all about the resistance of the Arabs to respecting our rights. Ergo, our battle has to be demanding our rights. And stop trying to cut a deal with these primitives who today deny the existence of the two temples in history. With cranks and crackpots like these and murderers, no serious agreement can be written and be adhered to by them. 22 years ago, that was tried, and if the Israeli ruling class has not yet learned that that was a failure, it has learned nothing. Okay, that's it for this evening. I'll be back, God willing, on Thursday. Until then, Laila Tov, Me'eretz Yisrael.